Welcome to the Alex Dynasty Daily Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan McNamara. Been excited to record this podcast all day. It was just heating up. So this is like a nerd's dream. I've been very interested, and I've been sort of going through in my mind about Lamar and, you know, over the past couple of weeks about how I'd play this out. And you know, a lot of these situations, you never truly get like, they become fantasy situations. They don't come to fruition, and they'll become mental exercises. However, we are getting it, Lamar. We're actually going to get a chance to see what happens when there's a bidding war on a quarterback. He's not fully in free agency. Teams are going to have to bid on him. We saw this happen with Deshaun Watson last year. And now we're in a situation where we have another quarterback on the market, and we're going to see what happens, right? We're going to see what the potential market is for Lamar Jackson. And I think it's a really fascinating situation for the Ravens. I said back in February, I tweeted, and I mentioned this in a group chat, like I've talked about this idea because it's been ruminated. Like I have a real world example of kind of why I think this makes a lot of sense for what the Ravens did. I said on Lamar Jackson franchise tag, Baltimore could give the non-exclusive tag, let Lamar negotiate with others. He then signs an offer sheet from another team that's closer to Baltimore's number than Jackson's ask, and Baltimore immediately matches. This is similar to the way that the Suns handled DeAndre Ayton. Again, I like to use a lot of other players, right? A lot of other inputs, right? A lot of basketball stuff. I think basketball is really applicable to a lot of stuff we do in Dynasty. Again, I've talked about this, like the shape of the curves and the like are very, very similar. Okay. So I think using those, using those other examples where we get some lessons from teams that are smart, right? Incentivized, kind of playing a lot of the same thought processes out that we are playing, right? I think those are really interesting opportunities for us. I think that the, and I've looked at the, I think the Suns thing is slightly different because when the Suns, now if you're not familiar, the Suns, DeAndre Ayton, he was the number one pick in the draft. A couple of years ago, it was the Luka Doncic and Trae Young draft. He was the number one pick. He's turned out to be very good, I would say. I don't think he's an elite player. He's a very good player. Third best player on a team that, went to the finals, right? So, I think he's a very good player. So I think he's elite. And they got kind of to a point if they were negotiating with him. And there was like a rule max on what they can offer. Like there's actual maximum contracts you can offer based on, some different criteria on like your experience and the like, right? So there is, we don't need to get into that, but there is, just suffice it to say, there's a maximum that a player can get offered. They kind of toyed around with him, didn't extend him, didn't offer him the max and let him test what's called restricted free agency, which is kind of similar to the situation that we're in now with Lamar, right? Which is, and other teams can negotiate with him, and then Baltimore has a right to match, okay? Or he walks, okay? And I believe in the NBA, I believe that there isn't the two, there, I don't think there's compensation for it, right? I don't think it's the same as the NFL. So you're basically, losing an asset if you let the player walk. So they let him hit free agency. A team offers him, I believe it was the Pacers, offered him the max contract that could be offered, and the Suns immediately matched. Within a minute, they matched, right? So they exercised their matching rights right away and didn't let him out the door. It was kind of stupid the way it played out. Honestly, they handled it poorly just from a player management perspective. They should have gotten the thing figured out and gone that route. And figured it out before then, right? But they didn't, and right? They kind of found themselves in this awkward situation with one of their star players. But they immediately matched. And I don't think there was very much chance that it was like less than the max that he got offered. I think a team was going to offer him the max, right? I don't really think there was a chance that he wasn't offered the max. Like, that's kind of the way NBA contracts are. But that's kind of the comp that I use for this. It's different in the NFL in a couple of ways. Number one, I don't think Baltimore has really been able to negotiate with Lamar in a way that, like, if you're worth nine figures, get some counsel, right? Like, the first thing I would do if I won the Powerball would be hire a lawyer. Like, the second thing I'd do would be hire a financial advisor. And that'd be before we even cashed in the pick, the ticket, okay? Get some counsel. They're going to be able to help you in certain ways. You're going to be able to sort of smooth things over for you. But they're going to be able to give you some advice. Lamar represents himself. His mom helps him, which I think is admirable. But I think it does leave you in disadvantaged situations like you're in right now. And I can totally understand Lamar Jackson saying, that dude over there in our division, someone paid three first-round picks for him and then gave him a quarter billion dollars over 5 years and guaranteed every penny of it. And I have played underpriced for you guys for the last 5 years. I've been hurt. I played through it. I won an MVP. I'm better than that guy. And I'm more proven than that guy. And I want to be paid like that guy. Some of that we could debate, right? I think that there's reasonable debates to be had there. This isn't the point of this podcast to debate the two of those players. But I understand the argument from his perspective. I absolutely understand the argument. And so we are in a position of he's basically saying that. Baltimore saying, yeah, but we're not going to pay you a fully guaranteed contract. That's never really happened. Right? It's happened one time, and it's an exception. We've seen this in other places, right? DeAndre Hopkins' contract was really weird because it was involved with a trade. And so it looked like he had like $30 million a year, but that really wasn't true. And so it kind of offset the wide receiver marketplace in a weird, funky way. And then it really became one of those situations where it wasn't really precedent, right? And I get it from Baltimore's perspective. I analogize this to, you know, and let's just use some round numbers. Okay, let's just for the sake of argument, let's use round numbers just so it's easy. Lamar Jackson's asking for 5 years, $250 million. I'm not sure these are exactly right, but let's just use it as an example. And Baltimore is offering 5 years, $250 million. But instead of $250 million guaranteed, they're offering $150 million guaranteed. Right? Let's just, again, I'm not saying that that's what it is, but let's just use that as a hypothetical situation. And that would be kind of like in line with the Kyler Murray deal, right? You know, when you kind of look back at Kyler Murray's deal, like it's kind of in that range, okay? It's less than the Deshaun Watson deal. And I think, frankly, I think Lamar Jackson's a better quarterback than Kyler Murray. I think he's a more dependable quarterback than Kyler Murray. If I wanted to hitch my wagon to one of the players, I'd pick Lamar Jackson over Kyler Murray, right? But, like, that's kind of the neighborhoods that these contracts exist in. Murray's was like 230, and like I think guaranteed at the time of signing was like 103 million. I think actually more of it was guaranteed in practicality, but you sort of get the idea. Like, let's call it, you know, 120 130, somewhere in that range, which is kind of guaranteed. So under our hypothetical, like, Baltimore is paying a little bit more, but let's say it's around the same range as Kyler Murray, right? I think Baltimore, from a practical perspective, could say one of a couple of things. Number one, like, we're going to tag him. We're not letting him walk out the door. He's not going to test the open market. You have to tag him. You don't have a choice. And then the question comes down to a little bit of, you know, do we tag him with that gives him the ability to talk to other teams? Or do we give him the ability not to talk to other teams? All right. So you basically have an exclusive and a non-exclusive tag. So the exclusive tag is about $45 million. And it means that, you know, no other teams can negotiate with him. He's their, he is Baltimore's asset, basically, right? He can, he has two options. Either sign the franchise tag and play with them. Well, I guess three options. Sign the franchise tag and play with them. And he can negotiate a long-term contract with Baltimore, or he can sit out the year, right? Those are his three options. With a non-exclusive tag, right? Again, that exclusive tag costs $45 million, thereabouts. The non-exclusive tag costs $32 million this year, okay? And so you'd take $13 million less cap hit. You'd pay $13 million less in cash, but you expose him to free agency, or essentially like a restricted type free agency. You allow him to negotiate with other teams. And so you have to sort of ask yourself the question of, you know, what is that worth, right? And which one is the right way to do it? Typically, teams don't do a non-exclusive tag. Typically, teams use a non-exclusive tag on every other position but quarterback, because the compensation, if you decide to offer an offer sheet to a player on a non-exclusive tag, is two first-round picks, right? So let's just use another example. Josh Jacobs gets the franchise tag placed on him, right? It's a non-exclusive tag. A team could come in and sign him and say, hey, we're going to pay him 5 years, $80 million, okay? And they negotiate that contract with him. They then have to pay the Raiders two first-round picks, okay? No one is doing that at any position other than quarterback. So practically it doesn't matter except for quarterbacks. Okay. So they're in the unique situation of, you know, do we place a non-exclusive tag on him, or do we place an exclusive tag on him? And, you know, I thought this was interesting for them and for the Giants, right? What decision did they make? Were they going to make on Daniel Jones, right? Would they have gone exclusive or non-exclusive, right? Would they have said, we want to lock him down and make sure that he's not open to the market? Or do we want to let him test the market, see what it is, and then we retain the right to match, okay? So what do you get from basically risking him to the market, right? What does Baltimore get for allowing, placing the non-exclusive tag on him? Because it seems like that's more risky. They get a couple of things. Number one, they actually get $12 million of value, right? They get $12 million. That's $12 million less than they would have to pay. $13 million. Well, it's $13 million. The difference between 45 and 32 is $13 million. They have to pay a lot less money to Lamar Jackson this year to keep him under contract, okay, on the franchise tag for a one-year deal, okay? So there's that aspect. Well, what else is there? There's also the other aspect of they can get, let's call it a neutral arbiter, okay? It's not really a neutral arbiter, but you know, market forces are a good thing, right? It kind of can tell you, like, hey, am I totally out of whack, right? If you're negotiating, if someone's seeking to buy your house, right, and it's just some random person comes up to your house and says, hey, I'm going to offer you this amount of money, you know, do you want it? You might not know if that's a good amount of money for your house, right? You might not know. Now, you might say, well, like, I bought it for this. Like, this is more than I bought it for, but is it actually a good deal? And if you don't solicit other information, you're not truly going to know. And so instead of just accepting the deal, you go ahead and you say, fine, let's put it on the market and see. And, you know, you might get more, you might get less, but honestly, a lot of times the other person's not going to know and you get more information, right? And then you're in a better bargaining position. I analogize this, like, I used to do this situation with Lamar, like, kind of all the time at work. And so what I would do, right, let's say that I'm a prosecutor. I'm part-time now, so I don't really do it as much. But if I had a case where, you know, let's just say it was a case where I had really good evidence, right? And, you know, I thought I could prove the guy guilty. And so I'm kind of coming at it with a, you know, with a perspective of like, hey, this guy's probably going to go to jail. Like he's in a lot of trouble. Probably deserves to go to jail. Got a strong case, can really prove it. You know, I'm really strong. Okay. And so I make an offer of, you know, to send the guy to state prison, let's just say for 10 years. And the guy comes back and he's like, well, like, you know, there's all these other reasons. Like, that's crazy. You know, like, I want to go to trial. Like, I didn't do this. I'm like, okay. Like, we've got your DNA, I got you on video. And, you know, we've, you know, we have a confession from you. Right. But like, you don't want to take anything. Like, okay. Like, you know, or, you know, you're basically totally at odds. Okay. One of the things that I would do would be like, you know what, let's just see what the judge has to say, right? Like, let's just go, like, let's get a court date. Let's see what the judge has to say. And, you know, maybe that'll shed more light on the information, right? He might come down and say, you know, hey, I think your offer of 10 years is a little too high, but, you know, listen, he might even talk some sense into the defendant and say, like, you know, listen, like, they got a lot of evidence, right? I don't see any reason to suppress this confession, right? Like, you're pretty jammed up. But I'll offer you something, you know, less than the 10, but you got to take responsibility and sort of agree to it. And so you come from this situation of like, I don't really want anything, or I want something on the extreme minimum side versus me wanting something much more towards the higher end. And you sort of get like a neutral arbiter to kind of come in and say like, hey, listen, this isn't, you know, we can sort of resolve this somewhere in the middle. As this non-exclusive tag was going on, like the debate between whether or not they should use the exclusive or the non-exclusive tag, I kind of said to myself, like, this is the perfect opportunity to use a non-exclusive tag, because you're basically going to the judge and saying, fine, judge, what will you offer? And then you kind of say, all right, well, now I kind of know. And, you know, the defendant might say at that point, like, all right, well, I'm going to take my chances, right? I'm going to go. I'm going to have a trial, or like, hey, I kind of understand, like, now I kind of get what the market is, and I can't really be, you know, as sort of locked into my position, right? If I want any sort of break, like, now's the time to kind of do it. And so in this case, I think, right, what you're saying is like, Baltimore is really the defendant in this situation, where they're like kind of getting the additional information and saying, okay, like, you know, is this something I want to take now that I kind of know, you know, if it comes in between what what they've offered Lamar, right? So for example, like, let's just use some numbers to sort of flesh it out. Again, in our hypothetical, Lamar wants 5 years, $250 million. He wants it all guaranteed. Again, in our hypothetical, Baltimore is willing to offer him $250 million, willing to offer him 5 years, but we'll only give him $150 million guaranteed. And let's say that team, you know, NFC team X, right? Let's call him, I don't know, Atlanta, decides to come in and say, hey, we will offer Lamar, you know, 5 years, $250 million, but we're going to agree to pay him, you know, we're going to basically guarantee 210 of that. That puts Baltimore in a position where they have, right, and let's say Lamar wants to do that, right? That puts Baltimore in a position that's actually much better than it was just negotiating against Lamar, because they can't, right? They sort of can't get through to him, but it allows him to sort of get the additional information and say, like, I am now able to negotiate against a whole lot of other people, and I'm not able to get the $250 million guarantee that I can, but I'm getting a lot closer than the $150 that Baltimore was offering me, and, you know, I'm willing to take that, okay? And so Lamar, you know, gains from this, but Baltimore can also say, like, all right, like, we didn't want to give him $250 million. You know, do we now want to lose out on him, right? And, you know, I think if push came to shove, like, they'd probably match, right, in this hypothetical. Maybe they don't want to go to $250 million. Maybe no one wants to go to $250 million. Maybe they kind of know that. Right? I suspect that they kind of have an idea that no one's going to give him the full guarantee. That's why they're like, fine, go get a suitor, right? Go get someone to give you that, and then we'll see if we want to match or not. But we're not going to offer you that, because we don't think that that's something that you're going to be able to get. I think it's a fascinating play. I think it's a super smart play by Baltimore. You know, they're getting a lot of flack for like, well, you could just trade him and get three first round picks. Like, I think that they view this as like, hey, you know, we're going to go out here and we really think like this is going to save us money, right? We think we're probably going to match. I think Baltimore, in their opinion, is probably in a position where like, we're going to be able to match this. We're going to decide to match it. And we think that by putting the non-exclusive tag, it's going to get to a spot where Lamar is going to have to take a deal that's probably less than he wants to take. But he's going to realize that he's not going to be able to get what he totally wants. And that'll put us in a position where instead of paying him, you know, they're probably not necessarily locked in at saying $150 million guaranteed, but that's what they're offering. And you know, there's probably a place for compromise in the middle. And that's probably where the market comes in, right? I think that's how this plays out. I think it's a fascinating decision. I really do. And like, I've been hoping that they would non-exclusive tag him because I want to see how it plays out. Like, I've wanted to see how this would play out. So that's kind of the long and short of it. Again, I think there's a lot of theory in this. You know, I usually save the strategy sessions for Sunday, but I've been waiting to talk about this one with the hope that they would non-exclusive tag him for like months. So you got like 20 minutes of kind of my theory on it. I think it's a great idea. Again, this is kind of like the, almost like the, if the dynasty equivalent of this is like you get an offer for Patrick Mahomes and you're like, wow, that's a really big offer. You know, well, do I want to take it? Like, well, what if I put it on the block and just sort of see what else is out there? Right? It doesn't stop me from taking this offer in the future, but there might be something more, right, to this player or whatever this offer, right? You know, you get a cold offer for, you know, Patrick Mahomes or you know, let's say someone less than that, you know, this player that maybe you don't necessarily have a great sense of their price on, but you think like, hey, this is a really good deal. But you go out and kind of offer, either put it on the block or go start offering more to other teams. Right? They don't know you're in negotiations. Right? The person that offered this doesn't know you're doing this. Right? So you go out and you try and seek more information, right? It's a really good strategy, right? Something that we've done, I've advocated for. I guess a great strategy. So I think this is a good lesson we can learn from Dynasty. I think it's a good lesson about kind of thinking through your decisions, right? You know, what's the first round pick actually worth in money? Right? There's a good chance that they save money by sort of risking a first round pick. You know, we've seen like $20 million, I think it was worth like an early second in that Brock Osweiler deal, you know? So something like that, right? It's probably, you know, middle first, probably worth like $30 million. That honestly probably comes in about what they would save, right? Like that's probably what their calculus is, right? They probably have it down to a number. So I think that's interesting. And I've been wanting to talk about it for a while. So that's kind of the deep dive, my deep thought process on all of that. So that's Lamar's situation. Again, I still think he's an elite quarterback. And I think hopefully we'll get some long-term answer out of all of this. All right, so some additional stuff here on the quarterback position we can look at too. Daniel Jones gets signed a contract. A lot of money. Congratulations. Not sure I necessarily love it. We don't have the full breakdown yet, but it looks like, according to Ian Rappaport, it's 4 years, $160 million. With 35 more in incentives he could earn. It's $82 million in the first 2 years, $94 million virtually guaranteed at signing. Usually what that means is like there's a certain amount due at signing and the other side of the like the rest of it, like there's usually a roster bonus like after year one. It's typically how that works. So yeah, that's kind of how that was like the Ryan Tannehill kind of had that type of contract. So virtually guaranteed is kind of how that works. And then first year cap number is $19 million. So 2 to 3 years of security would be kind of how I would think about that. That's going to move him up in the tiers from kind of uncertain up to a multi-year certainty for him, right? So again, do I love it? Not really. Like, he's kind of a profile that we typically avoid. But we're going to put him in a two-year window. So that moves him up into Kenny Pickett. Wilson's in that range. Lamar Jackson, I have in a two-year window as we sit right now. Lawrence and Hurts. So again, that will change. That will modify a little bit. Also going to move Derek Carr up into that tier with his new contract extension and put him up there. So that's good for him. A new contract, I should say. It's not an extension. He has a contract with the New Orleans Saints, which is about, it's kind of in the range of Daniel Jones. So it's $150 million, 4 years, with guaranteed money through 2024, so really the next 2 years. When you look at the guarantees, it's basically $60 million through 2023 and 2024, and $40 million in 2025 guaranteed for injury at the time of signing. So if he got injured, that's guaranteed, but it is not otherwise guaranteed. So actually less guaranteed money probably than the Daniel Jones. We haven't gotten the full, we haven't gotten the full number yet. So we'll see, right? We'll sort of see. Again, I think Daniel Jones making a little bit more guaranteed is looks like it's how it's going to ultimately come out. We'll have to get the full specifics on that. So, but I think Derek Carr firmly in a two-year window. The other one that was pretty cool to see, I was happy for him, Geno Smith. His is a little bit different, and I find this one really interesting. It's basically 3 years, $75 million. You know, it was reported initially as 3 years, $105 million. There's $30 million in incentives on the back end of that, right? So that's changes it a bit. You know, so this is basically $25 million a year. A lot of incentives, right? Kind of a prove it type deal. Him betting on himself, I'm sure, some degree in that. $40 million guaranteed at signing. I think this leaves them perfectly in a window if they want to select a quarterback at five to do so. You know, I think that's exactly what this says, right? We're not necessarily sure long term if this is, you know, if you're the guy you were last year, right? But you can kind of earn it, right? But there's nothing to necessarily preclude us from moving on at the end of this year, right? That's really the blend there in this contract. So I think a really interesting construct, again, of the deals, I like his the best from the team side. I'd much rather pay that for Geno Smith than what they pay for Daniel Jones. So, yeah, so that's kind of the deal. I'm leaving him in a likely two-year window. I don't think it's a guaranteed two-year window. I think it's a likely two-year window. So I'm leaving him in that range. Again, I don't think there's anything to preclude them from drafting a guy at five. I think this leaves them right in the window to do that. So I've also updated some additional stuff too. We got a couple more news items that are not quarterback, but a lot of this is quarterback. I've updated the quarterback matrix on the website to 2023 starters, and I'm adding you know, some confidence stuff in there, right, about what we think in terms of confidence in them being the 2023 starter. So I've taken out before today, it had the 2022 starters in there. I've taken those guys out. Guys have retired. I don't think that Davis Mills belongs on the tier anymore, right? So that's kind of how I would view these, right? It's we're sort of flipping the script to the next season, and now we're getting more clarity on where guys are going to land, right? So we got the tracker. So I have, in terms of confidence, guys that I have for starting this year, it's still not that many, which is pretty funny considering how far along we are. I only have 17 guys as being confident. If you run them down, Josh Allen, yes. Tua, yes, but I feel stupid at the moment for having him there. Like, it seems like there's still enough smoke around them being in on Lamar Jackson. There's Brady rumors. Like, I don't know. Maybe I should be no. Like, I feel like I should give Tua the benefit of the doubt and that he's going to be the starter there this year. But I don't know. It just seems like people don't want to put him there. I don't know. It's weird. Mac Jones, I have no. I don't necessarily trust that yet. I don't know on Jets. There's rumors as I'm recording this that it could be potentially Aaron Rodgers. And heck, I might have an emergency podcast tomorrow that that details a trade between those two teams. So we'll see. Lamar Jackson I have as a no confidence for Baltimore because of the franchise tag that was aforementioned. Burrow, yes. Watson, yes. Pickett, yes. Houston, no. Indy, no. I think both those guys, probably both those teams, probably starting rookie quarterbacks. Jacksonville, yes, with Trevor Lawrence. I'm not necessarily certain on Ryan Tannehill yet, so we'll see there. There's some stuff percolating about him, which is enough to just keep me kind of like one of those like squinty side-eye type deals. I think that they could be a dark horse candidate for a quarterback like Aaron Rodgers, so we'll see how that goes. Russell Wilson, yes, in Denver. Mahomes, obviously, yes, with Kansas City. No confidence in Vegas. Not sure where that's going to land. Justin Herbert, yes, with the Chargers. Yes, Daniel Jones. Yes, Dak Prescott. Yes, Jalen Hurts. No on Washington. I don't believe Sam Howell is going to be this. I'm not certain that he's going to be the starter. No on Jared Goff at present. I think they're a dark horse candidate to be in on Lamar Jackson. So I would just sort of be cautious on that. Again, I like Jared Goff for what he is, but I don't think that necessarily should preclude you from preclude them from potentially addressing the position. Yes, on Justin Fields. I've actually heard some interesting anecdotes about Justin Fields that I think are useful. You know, kind of treating him in the same way that they treated that Philly treated Jalen Hurts, which is like, we're not necessarily sure you're the guy. Hey, we're going to build out future flexibility to get a guy if you're not the guy after this year. And, you know, if you're not the guy, we're probably going to be picking high enough to potentially address the position again next year, right? Especially if we get another future pick in, you know, this year and, in next year's draft and in 2025, right? We'll have the flexibility to move up and get a quarterback in next year's class. I think it's a pretty compelling argument, honestly. I think it's a pretty compelling argument. So we'll see. I think that makes some sense. And, you know, listen, they have a lot of cap space. They can bring in a lot of help for him. They can trade for potential help at wide receiver. You know, maybe they're going to a guy like DeAndre Hopkins, something like that. It wouldn't be terribly surprising. You know, give him some additional help, right? Ton of space. They can go into the free agent market. They can go into the into the draft, potentially double dip with multiple guys. So yeah, I think that they're a potential team to do a lot of help around Fields to get him some help and truly see if he's the guy. So I get that argument. I think it's a pretty compelling argument. No with Green Bay with Aaron Rodgers. I'm not certain on Cousins yet. I've still seen some speculation that he could be traded. I don't think that's an unreasonable take. They have to figure out something with that team. It's a lot of contract maneuvering, so we'll see there. I'm not sold yet. I think he is a 2023 starter. I'm not sold that Minnesota has him as in pen yet. Desmond Ridder, no in Atlanta, no in Carolina, yes with New Orleans with Derek Carr, no, I'm not confident in Tampa Bay. I don't know who that's going to be. Kyler Murray, yes, to the extent that he's going to play in 2023, yes with Matthew Stafford, no with Trey Lance at present. I have him in as the starter, the projected starter. I'm not certain as we sit here right now. You know, we'll see the status on Brock Purdy. Are they potentially in on another veteran guy that they could bring in to compete with Trey Lance and Brock Purdy? We'll see. And then Geno Smith is a yes. So 17 yeses, 15 nos. I'm sure in the next 2 to 3 weeks, we'll probably get a lot more certainty on these guys. So we'll be watching that here as we go along. The other two notes really that I have, I think are important. I guess three, Evan Ingram, franchise tag. Again, I think that kind of leaves him top 12 tight end. Hopefully they extend him. There's talks that, you know, some optimistic talks about an extension there with him. The running back situation, Saquon Barkley and Josh Jacobs, both tagged. Giants able to tag Saquon Barkley because of the Daniel Jones contract extension, but really coming down to the last minute. I was following into Starbucks today. It was fun to watch and follow along with that. And you know, watch as it was coming down to the minute with some of the tweets. So they're able to get Barkley tagged and keep him in house, and Josh Jacobs tagged. You know, there's some thought that maybe the Raiders are going to work on a long-term deal with him. I don't know. I'm really interested to see like their team direction. You know, is tagging him making a ton of sense for a team that might not necessarily be competing this year, right? I think that's an interesting debate. So that's really the angle that I would sort of be thinking about some of those guys. Again, I don't think it necessarily long-term, I don't think it submarines their value, but it does leave them, you know, susceptible. A torn ACL can really impact those guys' career, right? So just be cautious, you know, with them. Again, I think there's only so many running backs you can feel comfortable with for a couple of years. And, you know, and after that, like, those are the two guys that are, like, at the top of the non-confident after 2 years. They're confident for less than 2 years on their contract security. So we'll see. Maybe they both get extended. That's pretty much a wrap on that. Again, kind of shrinks some of the running back free agent market. Guys like Miles Sanders, David Montgomery, it'll be interesting to watch, guys. Hey, maybe it opens up a spot for Alexander Mattison that wouldn't have necessarily been opened up, so that'll be interesting. So that's the angle there. And then Calvin Ridley actually reinstated too. We'll add him to the list. He's reinstated. I don't think that necessarily precludes Jacksonville from coming back and addressing the wide receiver position again at some point here in the upcoming draft or offseason. So pretty exciting there overall in terms of a day, in terms of fantasy input, some fantasy, you know, some dynasty impact, some good game theory to think about, some strategy, all this team building stuff. Really, really exciting offseason here in front of us. And it's just heating up. The Lamar thing going to be something we'll probably continue to cover and be pretty excited about. So a little bit longer of a podcast today, blended some strategy, some theory in there, some bigger picture topics, and covering the news of what I thought was a pretty exciting day. So that'll do it here for this edition. And until next time, continue embrace the variance. We'll talk again very soon.